And we've got a couple more hours to go with Richard C. Hoagland. Up next, let's talk a little bit about Mars right here on Coast to Coast Day Out. And welcome back to Coast, Richard Hoagland with us. Richard, a few weeks ago, I had a chance to see Brian De Palma's movie again, Mission to Mars.
Yes.
Was that based on Monuments of Mars?
Yes.
That's what I thought.
Now, you know our sources on that?
Mm-mm.
Time Magazine.
Really? Tell me.
Time wrote a very, I can't remember the name of the author, because he's one of the only honest guys left in journalism. When De Palma came out with the movie, which was very weirdly announced, and the night before it was going to premiere, he split for France and never came back. And I have movie people who were trying to interview him, and they said, no director has ever done this with a major motion picture. Basically cut out on all the interviews that have been set up. So I knew there was something weird about Mission to Mars. And when I saw it, when Robin and I saw it, it was obvious that it was a tour de force of our theory of the face of Cydonia, the ancient civilization, the fact that Earth had been seeded. Everything that I'd written about in the Monuments of Mars was in that movie, including repeated references to 19.5.
Wow.
Do you remember those?
Yeah.
Like, the first time we see it appear is in the cyclone, the twister that kills the three astronauts. And the mathematics of vorticular fluid flow are basically tetrahedral and wind up with an answer of 19.5 if you run out the hydrodynamic equations. The next part of the film that deals specifically underscores the idea that 19.5 is the answer to the mystery of what's on Mars is laid out at the very end when Gary Sinise, remember when they're going to go into the face after they've figured out that it's an artificial thing? They have to send a signal, they have to send a DNA code, and see if it will answer
and then
all
it
that.
Seals up once they get inside.
Exactly. Well, when they're in there, and the guy, the poor guy, I forget who the actor plays, very, very interesting guy, did a program years ago called Sliders as the star. He plays a very good supporting character in Mission to Mars. Anyway, he is prepping the Earth return vehicle, and Gary Sinise, as the surviving leader of the expedition that's gone there to rescue the previous astronauts, who were killed under mysterious circumstances, except for one survivor. He says, we're leaving for Earth. The window opens at 19 hours, 50 minutes. Remember that?
Yeah.
19.5.
Yeah. Tim Robbins was in there.
Tim Robbins was also killed before they get to the Mars surface. Anyway, so in the original film, which I saw with Robin in the theater, then I've seen it a zillion times on television, there's a close-up in digital form of the astronaut in the HAB module prepping it for return to Earth and calling them on the radio and saying, guys, where are you? Where are you? You know, because there's no communication between them in the face and him sitting in the HAB a few miles away prepping it for launch. So they do a close-up of his arm as the countdown approaches 19 hours, 50 minutes, and you see in these big digital letters, 19.47, which was De Palma's way of basically acknowledging my work and that of his brother, physicist Bruce De Palma, who I collaborated with for years and years before he very unfortunately died of an alcohol overdose in New Zealand. Anyway, he put in a whole bunch of Easter eggs, De Palma did, to his brother, extolling the secret physics behind this NASA mission to Mars, set in a fictional future where they go into the face and find out who did it and where they went, and then Gary Sinise takes off after them, and the rest of the crew return home, launching at 19:50 hours. Okay, now, segue back to where I don't want to leave yet. We're not going to leave the moon yet. I spent 50 years getting here. Not going to leave yet, because there's stunning new stuff, new Easter eggs, the Chinese have left for us. The Chinese, for years, have been saying they were going to land in a place on the moon called Sinus Iridum, which is Latin for the Bay of Rainbows. Take a look at that top picture on the Enterprise homepage. The banner. What do you see in those glass structures?
Color.
Rainbows. You see glass rainbows. And part two is going to give all the physics and the giant diagrams and the geometry and all that to show that we're really dealing with glass refracting sunlight. Well, they've been tipping their hand for years. They're going for the rainbows, which is only possible on the moon, which has no atmosphere, if there is rainbows in glass structures. So the morning of the launch, everybody's around the world. I'm monitoring the internet. I'm watching Chinese television. I'm doing five different things at once, you know, which we didn't have back in the days when I was with Cronkite. We only had 42 screens in one control room. Now you have the world at your fingertips. Anyway, so I'm watching them set up for the landing, and suddenly the Chinese call an audible. They announce they're going to land, I think, an hour and a half early. And everybody all over the net is kind of like, well, what? Well, I won't put them anywhere near, you know, Sinus Iridum, the Bay of Rainbows. So they wind up landing on the moon an hour and a half before anybody. In fact, there are people on the internet who, you know, when they log onto these boards, they say, what, I missed it? I got up just in time to see it. And, of course, the Chinese, you know, pulled a fast one. They landed early.
On purpose.
On purpose. Why did they land early? Because that's when they had to land, if they wanted to land where they did land, which is at 19.5 north latitude in Mare Imbrium on the moon. 19.5.
That seems to keep cropping up, doesn't it?
Yeah. Did I say north? East longitude. The latitude where they landed was equally bizarre. When you go back to the question you asked me before, what are they up to? What's their objective? Why are they doing this? Why have they done this way? And I said to you, I think they're trying to blackmail someone behind the scenes to do something they want to do. What's the huge big thing between us and China right now, which is why Obama's on an airplane leaving tomorrow for the Far East for 5 days?
Really, two things. One, these islands that everybody's battling over.
Yeah.
And
that's
the debt.
And what?
The Chinese debt, our debt to the Chinese.
Okay, but what's the big thing that kind of encompasses both of those? This treaty, the Trans-Pacific Treaty, which is being secretly negotiated, that basically will give corporations, you know, run of the planet.
They already have it, Richard.
And there's, it'll give them, nothing is over until the fat lady sings. The point is there is rising opposition in the Far East as well as in the United States from left and right to this secret treaty that's so secret that congressmen can't even go in and take notes when they're looking at the documents, which is nuts. I mean, you can't run a democracy that way. So there's something the Chinese want in this treaty, and there's something that they're pressuring Obama to give them, even though the Congress hasn't given him the authority to negotiate and sign any deals. And so the Chinese, a few months ago, land at 19.5 east and 44 north. And you get exactly what that means, don't you?
How did they know all this?
Well, the 44 North is obviously a message to the 44th President of the United States. Pay attention. This is what we'll do unless you give in to our demands. This tonight is my best scenario, that the Chinese are not preparing to disclose. They're threatening to disclose, knowing that except for the crazies to see what's there, 99% of the 7 billion people, 99.9999%, will never even know what they've done because they don't have time.
If the Chinese disclose these structures on the moon,
meaning they hold an official press conference.
Right. It will make us look so bad.
Of course.
It'll make us look like we withheld information.
Yep. Against our principles, our constitution, our public contract, all those things, NASA, the most open civilian government agency in the history of mankind, all that claptrap.
And how do we explain it?
We can't.
You can't.
The only thing the Obama crowd could do would be to say, holy blank, blank, blank.
It wasn't
Batman.
Us. Yep.
You know, we didn't know this was going on.
We'll look into it.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting, and which tells me that things are not linear, is that even at the height of the extraordinary financial crisis we've been through since 2008, And with all the demands of the Health Care Act and jobs programs and people really hurting on Main Street and, you know, people on Wall Street making out like bandits, what one government program has been ticking quietly along, protected even from sequester?
The secret space program.
Yep, except it's not so secret. The secret space program, so we get our definition straight, George, you and I, is the one we never hear about, the one with real anti-gravity spaceships.
That's right.
The one can get to Mars in, you know, 3 days, that kind of thing. The not-so-secret program, the NASA program, remember, tonight we are at the mercy of Vladimir Putin because he's our ride to our space station.
For the foreseeable future.
Yeah. Now, but very quietly, put in place by a very, very gentle cooperation between Republicans and Democrats in the House and the Senate, there has been very quietly ticking along an effort on the part of NASA to not only build a huge new rocket as big as the Saturn V and a spacecraft to go on top of it called the Orion, but a set of plans that are sitting there waiting to be funded so we could send Americans up to 6 astronauts at a time back to the moon. And that's what I think is quietly going on behind the scenes, because our guys are going to say to the Chinese, okay, you want to make this public? You don't stand a snowball's chance in hell of getting there before we get back there, because we've already done it, and you've never done it.
Do you think these structures were used as an ongoing city, a base station? What do you think it was?
Well, I think
if that they're that big,
basically, well, they're huge. I mean, there's all kinds of evidence. I published on Enterprise over decades showing how huge and how much of the moon this stuff covers once you start to tally it up in terms of square miles of real estate. The only logical folks that could have done this would be a civilization controlling infinite energies, hyperdimensional physics, able to manipulate matter at will. They don't have to mine things, they have to dig things out of the ground, simply make it out of space, which is how matter is made anyway, by nature. And they've got nanotechnology, so they basically just put computer instructions in and tell whatever technology they want, build us a city and have it ready in 3 months for the opening. And these little guys go to work out of the materials of the moon, and they assemble a stunning, glittering glass structure of skyscrapers and domes and habitations and farms and factories and everything possible to provide sustenance for millions, if not billions, of people. And it all went to hell so long ago that all that's left now are these ancient, incredibly beautiful ruins because they're made of glass.
These structures, why would they be made of glass in an area that was bombarded by meteorites and asteroids?
Well, for one thing, when you talk about a dome on the moon, you're not talking about a salad bowl. You're talking about much more complex architecture with multiple layers. And if you actually do the calculations of the average, you know, time between impacts and failures of the glass holes, it turns out that on structures this big and volumes this huge, that even if you had something the size of a car or a house come through and make a huge hole, it would take months for the air to leak down appreciably because of the huge volume. So in that time, you obviously have robots, you know, on standby to when the glass breaks, you fix it. And in space, in a vacuum, it turns out the glass is many times stronger than steel. You know, I think the number is something like 20 times stronger. And so if you build it right with the right computer nanotechnology, it's basically immortal. And the proof of that is that even though the civilization is long gone, these extraordinary structures are still standing there and have been seen by all different kinds of missions, both manned and unmanned. I mean, the astronaut photography is stunning, which means in one fell swoop, the Chinese had A, proven that NASA sent astronauts to the moon, and B, proven that all the people who think that NASA did this in a soundstage somewhere are nuts.
It's pretty dramatic, Richard.
Well, the fact that I was there at JPL when NASA paraded out this guy running around that press room that afternoon, handing out little mimeo pamphlets claiming that Apollo 11, which was en route home, the guys were still halfway between the Earth and the Moon, falling toward the Earth in the command module, before they'd even touched the Pacific, this guy, squired around by official press people at the JPL, was handing out little mimeo pamphlets to the press gathered, you know, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, NPR, Japanese, Chinese, Russians, anybody who'd listen. The NASA had done this all on a soundstage. And even then, in my befuddled state, when I was believing everything that NASA said, it struck me as bizarre that this guy would be squired around officially, and these same people had made a big fuss about keeping Robert Heinlein out of that press room because he hadn't filled out the proper press credentials. So something was rotten in Denmark way, way back when, which means what NASA was doing was planting a meme for all those people that kind of need to look beneath the covers and see beyond the edge of the tablecloth. They were giving them a meme that we never went to the moon. The big conspiracy was NASA faked the whole thing. When the real conspiracy is NASA didn't fake it. They went to the moon, found stunning stuff, and have spent 50 years covering it up until on the afternoon of December 22nd, the Chinese blew the doors off with a cover-up. Now, I've sent over to Keith, I'm sorry, to Lex, the two
Keith
links.
Keith used to work for us 100 years ago.
Yeah, and Keith still, he actually put up the paper on the Enterprise website tonight for me.
Oh, good. Okay.
He says hi. Anyway, so I sent to Lex the two links to the two crucial photographs from the Chinese, the original Chinese website, the Chinese People's Liberation Army website, on which this first image appeared on the 22nd of December. And then I sent another link to one of the Chinese media outlets, which have posted the stunning image to the northeast of the glass skyscrapers standing there in their full glory and their multicolored spectral hues on the same image that you just equalized to see them there.
Is there any furor going on in China with
Nothing.
This? Nothing.
Nothing about this yet.
Huh.
Now, what's interesting is we've been following this little soap opera about the rabbit. You know, earlier you and I talked about the rabbit problems of you have 2 weeks of day and 2 weeks of night.
Yeah.
And the Chinese made a great fuss about how they had to take extraordinary precautions, else their little rabbit would die in the cold, bitter cold, of the lunar night. Well, after about 2 weeks on the moon, as it approached the second night in January, suddenly the Chinese announced they had a mechanical problem with the rabbit, with the rover, and they were unable to do the preparation steps to prepare it to hunker down with its little nuclear heating pads for heat to keep the electronics warm during the night so they could come back on the air when the sun rose again in 2 weeks. And from that time, from mid-January through now, every lunar dawn at this site, 19.5 by 44 north, the rabbit, despite not being prepped for night, has woken up. Now, how do we know that? Because we don't only have to listen to the Chinese. There is an independent group called UFO Skynet or something, based in Great Britain. It's linked in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
They have been monitoring with their own ground-based antennas the radio signals going to and from the moon. When the Chinese would irradiate the moon with their uplinked signal to, you know, command various functions of the rover and the lander, the reflection, just the bounce of that powerful radio signal made it back down to Earth, 250,000 miles, was picked up by the Brits' antennas, and they posted the plots, the traces, the spectral scans on the websites all over the world so people could see the Chinese talking to their two robotic landers and rovers. That has been happening regularly now, like clockwork, every 2 weeks for the last several months.
What a time for space, Richard. We had the blood moons, and now we've got the Grand Cross where four planets are forming a cross. It's an incredible story. Much more with Richard C. Hoagland when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, the California Earthquake Authority, KFI AM in Los Angeles, and the American Red Cross joining forces. They want California prepared in case there's a damaging disaster One of the things we're doing, auctioning off some people, including me, dinner at Morton's in Burbank, California. You've got until Friday to bid. How do you do it? Well, you go to this website, KFIAM640.com, KFIAM640.com. In the search section, put in Red Cross, and then scroll down in Bid on Me, and I'll meet you for dinner. Probably do it sometime in June or July. And welcome back to Coast, Richard Hoagland with us, of course. Richard, did you catch that story, by the way, where they think another moon is forming on Saturn's ring?
Yeah, I think it's total bunko.
Really? Why?
Oh, because there's something else going on.
Uh-huh.
There's something else, all right? Look, we have heard for decades about the impossibility of forming moons in the Saturn ring plane because of the tidal effects. You're basically too close to the planet. Tides will you know, draw things apart before gravity can
nothing forms.
Pull them together and all that. It's called the Roche limit. And then suddenly you have images of what they are touting as something, collecting and amassing and gravitationally becoming its own object in the ring plane of Saturn after billions of years of, you know, basically a static situation. No, something else is going on. And I think it's the physics in the rings. The key message behind what the Chinese have done with the moon is they know about the hyperdimensional physics. Why would you possibly, of all places on a planet, choose to land within 1/100th of a degree of 19.5?
It's brilliant.
Well, it's a message. We know, going back now at least to 9/11, that terrorists have a kind of a weird philosophy where they manifest some of their activities on a ritual calendar.
Codes and numbers.
Codes and numbers, exactly. Well, what I've been studying for a lot longer is a much bigger picture of things done according to these codes and numbers, and some of them are overlapping with what the terrorists are doing, which, of course, makes one wonder what the terrorists really know and where is their instruction really coming from.
Good point.
And the other is endemic, intrinsically endemic to this hidden secret physics. The real blackmail I think the Chinese are waging against the powers of the West is by landing at 19.5, there's no more blatant way to say, we know about this physics, we know how it works, we know what it can do to your economies if you allow us to destabilize the world. So we're not going to destabilize the world if you give us what we want. And what is it they want? Well, probably everything. I mean, the fact that the Chinese president officially went on record talking about the need for increased militarization of space. I mean, 19.5 is such a clue that there is a physics here that they are going to be studying. For instance, you asked me before, you know, what these structures could have been used for. And I said habitation. But you can't build them with nuclear energy. You can't build them with solar energy. You can't build them with fossil fuels. The level of energy used to manipulate matter, to create the extent of the ruins that we see, just on the moon now, we're not talking about anything else, is so overwhelmingly prodigious, you would need a hyperdimensional energy source to make it work. Because you cannot use sunlight, you cannot use the resources on the moon, which in terms of energy are basically nil. You have got to use space itself. You got to tap into the ether itself and tap that almost infinite plenum of energy, which, you know, the so-called free technology, free energy people have been talking about for decades, starting with people like Nikola Tesla and going on from there. The Chinese blatantly in their hidden coded message of landing in 19.5 by 44 north are saying, we know the physics, we know the secret. And guess what? When they landed, if you look at the panorama, a good panorama, which I'll be publishing in part two, to the southwest, located about 130 feet away, there is a modest house-sized pyramid sitting right next to where they landed at 19.5. And because Robin and I have been trekking all over the world measuring the HD energies, the torsion field effects of pyramids from, you know, the Central Americans to the Mayans to the guys that built Stonehenge and Avebury and in other places on the world that we've been able to measure so far, I know that during the eclipse, the so-called blood moon eclipse, the Chinese, according to the images which I have reproduced in the paper taken by the NASA satellite called Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, looking down to see where the spacecraft were parked relative to each other. If you look at that photograph midway through the paper of the overall scene from orbit, looking down, you'll see a bright dot, which is Chang 3, the lander. To the southwest of it, you'll see another little dot, which is Jade Rabbit, the rover. And then a few, about 100 feet further away on that exact line is the pyramid. And so by aligning the two spacecraft and the pyramid during the eclipse, which on the moon was a solar eclipse, which from our measurements of solar eclipses makes the torsion field go absolutely nuts, you get extraordinary readings. I think the Chinese deliberately sent this mission to measure the torsion field hyperdimensional physics of the moon at 19.5 east in the vicinity of a small pyramid by parking two spacecraft in exactly the right geometry, and we have heard nothing of the results of anything they did during the eclipse, have we?
And we know they're doing things.
But now there was an official story that came out yesterday that the Chinese engineers have figured out the problem, maybe, with the blockage of the circuit that allows the wheels to move, which is why the rabbit has been sitting motionless for 3 months in one place in line with that pyramid. After the eclipse and after their secret measurements, I'm thinking now they're going to suddenly come up with a magic fix, and the little robot rover, the little rabbit, will be able to roll further and further away. They published a map the other day, and guess where they have projected they want to drive if they can get the thing to drive again? Guess which direction? Northeast, directly toward those glittering glass ancient skyscrapers.
They have to go up there.
Of course they have to. But in science, nothing is obvious. I mean, they landed like 30, 40 feet from the edge of this crater to the north, which when you read the paper, you'll see has all kinds of stunning geometric things on the rim that are not rocks. There's no way those things are rocks. And the analysis in the paper shows you very clearly what they might be. Well, instead of doing the first thing that you would think if you land a mission on the moon and you land right next to something amazing and you've got an onboard analytical instruments you can typically rove over, touch it a few feet away and do analysis, they didn't do that. In fact, they suddenly called a timeout, claiming right after they offloaded their rover that instead of doing any analysis, they had to put the rover to sleep. It went into a nap for 4 days. Well, I've got the proof in the paper from the LRO orbital imagery showing the tracks that go right up to those rocks on the rim, that in those 4 days, the Chinese secretly analyzed those rocks because they're not rocks. They're pieces of the high-technology dome that's fallen out of the overhead rafters and is lying on the surface to be analyzed by the Chinese instrumentation on the Jade Rabbit. And we've got them with the LRO imagery.
Richard, what's new with the Jovian moon Europa, one of my favorite moons?
Well, there's a lot of talk now about a mission to finally go and analyze the life in the ocean that I first talked about back in 1980, I proposed for the first time publicly that Europa could have a live, living ocean underneath a shell of ice. And lo and behold, people like Robert Jastrow and Arthur Clarke thought it was the neatest thing since sliced bread. And Arthur gave me all kinds of kudos in his follow-on to 2001, A Space Odyssey, in the novel 2010. There's a section in there where he acknowledges the idea and that I came up with it. And of course, now we have Galileo. We've had the Horizons mission, the New Horizons mission, which is heading out to Pluto. And all these missions going by, Cassini went by Jupiter. on the way to Saturn. All these missions report to various degrees of detail that there is, in fact, this incredible global ancient ocean under the ice. And if there is an ocean there, George, which has been liquid for the history of the solar system, then the physics pretty much say that there probably should be something alive in that ocean.
I would think so. The ice is how thick?
Well, it could be in some places up to 60 to 100 miles.
Wow.
But we have cracks where now we know because of Hubble data and, you know, Galileo data and some Cassini data and some New Horizons data that the cracks allow water and stuff to come up from underneath, and the stuff appears to be organic, George, which means if we want to sample the life in that ocean, we may not have to drill through 100 miles of ice, which you would do with a nuclear probe that would basically just melt its way, you know, like the China syndrome, down to the ice till it got to the ocean. You may be able to sample the life forms that are coming up through those cracks because of the changing tides of Jupiter as Europa goes around in orbit in the colloquy with all the other so-called Galilean moons.
Why does Europa have that reddish-white look to it?
Well, the reddish stuff, I think, is both sulfur from Io as well as organic coming up from underneath. And what's interesting is that when I first wrote our paper on the possibility of oceans and life in the oceans of Europa back in 1980, which appeared in Star and Sky magazine, it was kind of like a one-off. It was like weird. It was unique. Now, of course, because of the ongoing exploration of the solar system by means of unmanned robotic, you know, rovers and flybys and orbiting spacecraft, we now know there's a lot of moons in this solar system that may harbor hidden oceans inside, including other moons of Jupiter. You know, Ganymede seems to have an ocean underneath its ice, but it's not venting and it's much too deep to be, you know, gotten to with current technology. Even Callisto may have an ocean underneath its battered ice shield. And we know of one other moon that where the ice is broken and the water vapor is gushing into space, carrying with it all kinds of really amazing organic molecules, and that's this little 300-mile-wide moon orbiting Saturn being observed by the Cassini mission called Enceladus. And there now is a proposal to send a mission like Stardust to, instead of a Stardust to a comet, to send a Stardust-type mission to Enceladus that would allow you to actually sweep through the plumes of water and organic material jetting into space, scoop up a sample, package it up without landing, you know, fire your rockets, send the spacecraft careening toward home, and a couple, 3 years after the encounter, you wind up picking up samples of life from the oceans of Enceladus in some desert in the American Southwest.
That moon looks like a walnut, doesn't it?
Well, it's got multiple different territories on different sides. See, the backdrop against this whole conversation is the Chinese have proven that there was an ancient Type II civilization in the solar system. That means that every one of those places where we applied our same, you know, observational techniques and analytical procedures and have found ancient ruins, including entire modified moonlets like Prometheus, which is one of the two ring shepherds, which orbits at the outer edge of the Saturnian ring system, just inside the F ring. It looks like an ancient battered spaceship. It's got geometry.
Yeah, it does.
And they've taken all these photographs and put them in the files. Well, when I recover from the lunar explorations over the last several months, because this has been very time-consuming.
And you're not done yet.
And we're not done. We've got to do part two and maybe a part three, because the Chinese have leaked all over the web the stunning actual data. To give you another example.
Are you sure they did it and somebody didn't steal it from them?
Well, look, China's a pretty controlled system. What happens in China if you go against the powers that be? What's the downside?
You die.
You get killed. So there's a pretty interesting code both in the Chinese government websites and on the Chinese media websites that you don't post anything that the officials above you don't like. So I do not see hacking. I do not see someone planting stuff on the Chinese websites. I looked and looked and looked, and for the first week, the only images that were coming out of China, get this, were screen grabs off a projection screen in the Beijing Cheng 3 control center.
Oh, my gosh.
They weren't even digital.
Horrible quality.
Exactly. Now, what happens when you take a photograph off a screen where you're projecting a slide? You get light scattering, which means all those images that came out of the mission the first week, from December 14th forward a week to the, what was it, 21 days, were basically screen grabs from the Beijing Control Center. Then on the 22nd, the first digital image, which could be worked at and looked at in a computer, was officially published on the PLA, the People's Liberation Army website, by the Chinese Army, and that's the one with the stunning glass-like structures blatantly visible when you just hike up the brightness a bit.
Didn't the moon have tunnels, too?
Well, yeah, there's stuff underneath. The further down you go, the better it'll be preserved, both from impact and from shock and all that. So there's a warren of stuff underneath the surface that we're seeing, because the surface that we're seeing is basically composed of the rubble of the domes and the structures that collapsed in the various places where we landed. At none of the landing sites where Apollo touched down could I find space that was empty and free of evidence of these ancient domes. Now, in science, again, you're supposed to do independent corroboration. Well, how can you get, George, any more independent than a government which hates your guts and a technology which is light years better than the film technology the Apollo astronauts used? They landed a totally different place on the moon where no one has ever landed before, 19.5 east by 44 north, and bingo, the first set of images that are digitally released by the Chinese Army shows the ancient same lunar domes that the Apollo astronauts photographed 50 years ago. We've got them. There's no way anybody can weasel out of this. We have got them. The question is, now that we've caught the bus, what do we do with it?
And who interprets what it might be?
Well, the implications of what it might be are obvious. A, the Chinese are going for the gold. They have announced that there's going to be a Chang 4, which is going to be a repeat of the, you know, little robot rabbit plus lander mission. They'll fix the wheels if they don't fix it on this mission with a magical workaround, which is what I think might happen. They either will land at the same place to complete this mission, or they'll land at a different place where they know there's more structures. Because remember, we've been looking at NASA imagery for decades. We've been posting all kinds of cool things all over the moon. The next thing they're planning to do next year, George, is to test an actual sample return technology.
That's amazing.
Which means with unmanned robotics, the Chinese are planning to go back to the moon, pick up pieces of these artifacts,
and come back.
And come back. And take them to Chinese military laboratories where they can analyze the hell out of the stunning stuff that has stood the test of time for millions of years in the incredible lunar environment.
Richard, when we come back in just a moment, of course, we're going to start taking some phone calls with you and continue chatting. The work of Richard C. Hoagland, his website, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It's the enterprisemission.com. Simply enterprisemission.com. It's been a while since we had Richard on, and it's always fun. You're next with him right here on Coast to Coast AM.